welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's yesteryear. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. For an hour of comedy greats, two giants of broadcasting. Coming up later on, we hear Eddie Cantor's program. Right now, it's Fibber McGee and Molly from February 1st, 1944 on NBC, where Fibber finds a diamond ring, starring Jim and Marion Jordan.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly. The makers of Johnson's Wax for home and industry present Fibber McGee and Molly, written by Don Quinn, with music by the King's Men and Billy Mills Orchestra. The Squire of 79 Wistful Vista is full of the spirit that will win the war, the spirit of 1875. Yes, with $20 in hand, he's gone downtown to buy a bond for 1875. His wife is telling a neighbor about it on the phone as we meet Fibber McGee and Molly.
Oh, of course, we've been buying bonds on a regular schedule too, Mrs. Toops, but McGee suddenly got $20 for selling an old camera, and he was going to use it to make a down payment on a new gold-mounted elk's tooth. But I talked him into buying an extra war bond. I guess I should have gone with him, but...
Hey, Molly! Molly, look what I got! Hey, Molly! Look what I got!
Just a minute, McGee.
Huh?
I was right, Mrs. Toops. I should have gone with him. I'll call you back. Goodbye.
Look!
What's all the excitement?
Look. Take a gander at this.
Heavenly days, a diamond ring.
A diamond ring? This is the diamond ring. This is the ring of your dreams, baby.
Oh, dear.
Look at the size of that. Why, you could cut your way out of a department store window in 3 minutes with this.
Now, stop jumping around a minute, McGee. Calm yourself. Now, where'd you get this diamond and why?
I've been trying to tell you. I was on my way downtown to buy this bond, see?
You mean you didn't buy it?
No, because when I met this guy...
But you went downtown for the one and only purpose of buying a war
bond. Yeah, I know, but when I met
And you didn't do it.
No, look, will you let me explain?
Oh, go ahead. Just pretend I'm an American soldier from Bataan in a Japanese prison camp and try to make me understand what was important enough to keep you from buying a war bond.
Oh, my gosh, when you put it like that, it don't seem like such a good deal. But I thought it was a... Well, gee whiz.
Well, tell me about it, dearie. I don't want to scold you before I know what to scold you about.
Well, now, look, here I was on my way downtown, see? So I stood in front of the jeweler's to look at that beautiful gold-mounted elk's tooth that you made me buy a bond instead of. And up comes this guy.
Was he 9 feet high?
No. Of course not. Why should he be 9 feet high?
Well, if this is one of your tall stories, I wanted him to be able to see what was going on.
This is the absolute truth. May lightning strike me where I stand if I ain't giving it to you straight.
Now, that's no fair. You got rubber-soled overshoes on.
Well, anyway, this guy ups to me and he shows me this ring he found lying in the gutter at 14th and Oak Street.
I wish you wouldn't talk to people who go around lying in gutters.
He wasn't lying in the gutter. The ring was lying in the gutter.
Oh.
So the guy shows me the ring, see? Very pretty, I says. What do you mean, very pretty? He retorts. This stone has got enough fire to roast marshmallows on. Oh, I ejaculates. A hot rock. Oh. No, he screams.
Now, look, McGee, never mind the actual dialogue. Make like it was for the Reader's Digest. Condense it.
Anyway, this guy tells me I got an honest puss. And would I take the ring and watch the want ads and see that it was returned to the rightful owner? So I gave him the $20 to show my good faith and... This is the ring.
I see. Well, if the ring is so valuable, why didn't the man watch the want ads and collect the reward himself?
Ah, I knew you were going to ask me that. And I'll tell you why he didn't wait. The man had to catch a train.
Oh. Why, McGee, he was just a confidence man.
Sure he was. He had enough confidence in me to know that
I mean he was a crook.
Oh, yeah. I'd like to meet more crooks that would sell me 4-carat diamond rings for $20. Whoever advertises for it can hardly offer less than $100 reward. So instead of buying one war bond for 1875, I can buy 5 of them. See? I'll probably have it by tomorrow, and I can...
Listen.
Hmm?
If everybody who was going to buy bonds tomorrow would buy them today, We could be a lot prouder of yesterday tomorrow. When I think how those poor...
Oh, hi, Alice. Hey, take a gander at the diamond ring I just bought. I'd better just squint at it at first. It's pretty dazzling.
Yeah, our rolling moss has just gathered himself a stone, Alice.
Jeepers, that's quite a diamond, Mr. McGee.
I'll say.
Like an ice cube looking for a glass of water. How much would it be worth if it was real?
What do you mean, if it was real? By George...
He says it is real, Alice. A man found it and sold it to McGee for $20, and McGee can claim the reward, if any.
Oh, that reminds me. Well, may I speak to Mrs. McGee alone a minute?
Why, sure, Alice. Go fix the furnace, McGee.
What's the matter with it?
Nothing's the matter with it. Go shovel off the sidewalk or something.
I did shovel off the sidewalk just this morning.
Oh, for goodness sakes, go away, dearie. Alice wants to speak to me privately.
Oh, well, gee whiz, why don't you say so? I can take a hint.
Will you excuse me, Mr. McGee?
Sure. And if you shot somebody and want me to help you dispose of the body, just say so. I belong to the crime club.
Oh, what's the trouble, Alice?
Oh, Mrs. McGee, I feel so ashamed.
Oh, don't be silly, dear. Everybody makes mistakes. That's why umpires wear so much padding.
Well, to think that at my age, Well, you and Mr. McGee have always been so nice to me. I feel that I think you should be the first to know that I can't pay my rent this week.
Oh. Well, it's about time. You know, you've been so prompt every week, I was beginning to worry. But now, what's the matter? Have you been laid off at the airplane plant?
Oh, no, but I spent my money this week for an extra war bond.
Well, good for you.
Oh, I really hated to do this, Mrs. McGee, but just so I won't be too far behind in my rent, here's the $15 for next week.
Oh. I see. Well, you can't pay your rent this week, but you're paying it for next week.
Yes, that's the least I can do. And thank you for waiting for this week's rent. You can come back now, Mr. McGee. See you later, Mrs. McGee.
Okay.
What's the kid done now? She in some kind of a jam?
No, she couldn't pay this week's rent is all, and it embarrassed her.
Oh, I know how she feels. That's why I never owned a trunk when I was a young guy. It's too hard to lower a trunk out of a window at night. I remember one
time... But listen, she paid next week's rent, so she wouldn't get too far behind.
Well, that was very decent. Oh. Wait, she couldn't pay this week, but... So she wouldn't get too far behind, she... Let's see now, if she paid for next week... And didn't pay this week. Next week, rent would be 2 weeks behind when the... Oh, that'd be... If next... Oh, this is ridiculous. Or is it?
Well, now, let me think. 1 week's rent is... But if she paid for...
Billy Mills and his orchestra playing I'm Just Wild About Harry.
Paid for next week, it's the same as paying for this week, isn't it?
Why, certainly not. She said this money is for next week, so she's paid for 2 weeks, you see. Except that she owes us for 1 week.
Well, if she owes us for 1 week, then she's only paid for... Hey, where's my ring? What did I do with my diamond?
Oh, my gosh. I've lost it. Where is it? Hey, help me look for it, Molly. Help me.
Oh, calm yourself.
Huh?
Look, you're wearing it on your finger.
Oh. Whew. Boy, what a scare. I got an investment in this thing. I got to watch the want ads pretty close, too, now. Hey, what time does the evening paper show up?
About 3 days after the paper boy hides it in the shrubbery.
You keep an eye peeled for the paper kid tonight. If somebody offers $100 reward for this ring, I don't want to miss the chance.
Come in. Oh, heavenly days, it's Mr. Wellington.
Good day, Mrs. McGee. You're looking very charming, and McGee, you're looking.
Hi, Wellington. I'm glad you came in. We were at your theater the other night, and I got a complaint.
If it is in reference to the patented seats which spring up when you lean over to speak to someone, causing you to squat on the floor with some violence, they have already been called to my attention.
Well, I think he wants to complain about your newsreels, Mr. Wellington.
Exactly. I don't mind spending an evening watching Francis X. Bushman throwing his profile at Beverly Bain. But you might at least get some up-to-date newsreels, Sig.
Yeah. We know Woodrow Wilson was elected.
Yeah. And we know Pershing got back from France all right.
And that they're now carrying mail in airplanes.
Yeah, we know all that. And furthermore, we get awful sick of seeing shots of women smacking a bottle of champagne with the front end of a boat.
Have you finished? I don't want to interrupt.
Yes, Mr. Wellington.
What was it you wanted, Sig?
Not a thing, old fellow. Just strolling by, cold day, stopped in to get warm. I am. Good day.
Good day, Mr. Wellington.
And I shall take your criticisms under serious consideration. Though I may spend less time in the future as manager of the Bijou Theater, so the results of your complaints may be rather unsatisfactory. Yes, if my draft board insists.
A little rough on him, McGee. He's rather a nice man.
Ah, he's too fine-haired to suit me. He takes too serious the fact that he was born in Superior, Wisconsin.
Say, is that anywhere near Starved Rock, Illinois, if you'll forgive my mentioning it?
Forgive it? Why, bless you, my child. I was wondering how I could get around to it myself. Good old Starved Rock, Illinois. I got an old friend living there, a fellow by the name of Fred Nittany.
Fred Nittany.
Mm-hmm.
That name is familiar.
I probably heard me mention it. Yep. Fellow was a Fred was a fellow that he and I had a vaudeville act together.
Oh, that Fred Nittany.
Yeah. We trooped together for years, Fred and me. I ever tell you about the time we were...
Hello, folks.
Hello, Mr. Wilcox.
Hi, Junior.
I was just going by and I thought I'd stop it. Well, who gave you the phony sparkler, pal? Libby Owens?
It isn't glass, Mr. Wilcox. It's a real diamond.
Quite a rock, ain't it, Junior? This is bigger than the one the pilgrims landed on. About 4 carats. Just bought it this afternoon.
Man found it downtown. McGee's just holding the ring till the rightful owner's advertised for it.
It's a beauty, ain't it, Junior?
Yes, but I still don't think it's real. A real stone would have more sparkle.
Say, I thought this diamond had lots of sparkle, Mr. Wilcox.
It has. Why, with the light this thing shoots out, Junior, I don't dare wear it out at night. The moths would keep flying into it.
Oh, horse feathers. Hold it over here and compare it.
Compare it with what?
The sparkle and glitter of this Johnson wax tabletop.
Oh my gosh. If we were showing him the Mona Lisa, he'd claim she was smiling because the picture frame was Johnson wax.
No kidding, folks. Look at that ring and compare it with the brilliant surface of this tabletop. Look at the luster of that waxed surface. Look at the depth and the beauty of the grain of the wood. Can you, by any stretch of the imagination, compare that to a repulsive old diamond?
Say, remind me to have this table set in the gold mounting, McGee. I'll wear it to bingo parties.
Yeah.
And when you think that a diamond is merely ornamental, and Johnson's wax is so useful, protecting and preserving and beautifying floors, woodwork, furniture, and 1,000 other things, why, who'd want diamonds when they could get Johnson's wax?
I would. May Racine forgive me?
Incidentally, where'd you say you bought this ring, pal?
Downtown. I found it in the gutter at 14th and Oak.
Oh, I see. You mean he found it and sold it to you for $20?
Yeah.
And said for you to watch the want ads because somebody'd probably offer $100 for the return of it. And he'd do it himself, except he had to catch a train.
That's it, Mr. Wilcox, word for word. Why, you must have been there and heard the whole thing.
How did you know, Junior?
How did I know? Oh, brother. So long, sucker.
I think he thinks you got taken, McGee.
Why, that's impossible. Anybody could tell that this diamond is extremely valuable. Might be a good idea to take it downtown and have it appraised, so... Ah, oh, but that's silly. Just because...
Well, I've got to go write out my grocery list for dinner, McGee. Let me know how the argument comes out. I'd be interested to know whether you made an investment or a mistake.
Fine thing. Nobody ever believes I can do anything. Other people make fancy big deals and nobody sneers at them. What is it about me that makes people scoff? My gosh, I can't... Come in.
Hi, mister.
Oh, hi, sis. You seen anything of the paper boy? What's so funny about that? I just says, have you seen anything of the paper boy?
Oh, the paper boy's a girl, I betcha.
He is? I mean, is she? Or since when?
Since Harry Toops, that's Willie Toops' brother, started working in Kramer's drugstore after school, and he sold his paper out to his sister, Teresa Toops, for $7, and threw in a bicycle pump, only the pump wouldn't work, so Teresa...
Now, wait a minute. I didn't ask for a history of the newspaper business back to Richard Harding Davis. I just asked you if the evening papers had been delivered.
You did not, I betcha. You asked me if I'd seen the paper boy, and Teresa Toops isn't a boy, she's a girl. And when she found the bicycle pump wouldn't work...
I don't want to hear about the bicycle pump. I'm not interested in bicycle pumps.
You got a bicycle, mister?
No.
That's why, then. Because when Teresa Toops found out her bicycle pump wouldn't work, she...
Stop it, will you? I tell you, I don't want to hear about any bicycle pump. I merely want to know if the evening papers have come. Can you answer that, yes or no?
No.
Huh? Doggone it, have the evening papers come yet?
Yes.
Oh, boy, that's the news.
But not yours, though.
Why not mine?
Because Teresa Toops didn't get this far because she had a puncture and her bicycle pump wouldn't work.
Oh, skip it. All you can talk about is bicycle pumps.
Oh, I've been talking about the same one all the time, mister. The bicycle pump that Willie Toops' brother Harry sold to Teresa when his paper ran.
For the love of Pete, stop it!
Okay.
Now look, sis, let's be reasonable. Forget Teresa's pumps for a minute. I want to make you a deal.
Okay, mister, but you know about the woman power shortage. You make it good.
Right. 2 bits. You get me an evening paper and I'll give you 2 bits. Buy one, borrow one, beg one. But get one, see?
Gee, must be pretty important, mister. What you want a paper so bad for?
I want to see the want ads, if you must know.
Well, then will you do me a favor, mister?
Sure, what's that?
If you see anything in the want ads about somebody wanting to sell a good bicycle pump, Teresa, too.
That's right, don't get the paper!
The Kingsman and the Surrey with the Fringe on Top.
Out tonight with me, honey, here's the way it's gonna be. You will sit behind a team of snow white horses in the slickest gig you ever hope to see. Chicks and ducks and geese better scurry when I take you out in the Surrey, when I take you out in the Surrey with the Fringe on Top. Watch that fringe and see how it flutters when I drive those high-step strutters. Nosy folks will peep through the shutters and their eyes will pop. The wheels are yellow, the upholstery's brown, the dashboard's genuine leather. With isinglass curtains you can roll right down in case there's a change in the weather. Two bright side lights winking and blinking, ain't no finer rig I'm a-thinking. You can keep your rig if you're thinking that I care to swap for that shiny little Surrey with a fringe on the top. All the world will fly in a flurry when I take you out in the Surrey, when I take you out in the Surrey with the fringe on top. When we hit that road bent for leather, cats and dogs will dance in the heather, birds and frogs will sing all together, and the toes will hop. The wind will whistle as we rattle along, the cows will moo in the clover, the river will ripple out a whispered song and whisper it over and over. Don't you wish you could go on forever? Don't you wish you could go on forever? Don't you wish you could go on forever and never stop in that tiny little shiny little Surrey with all the fringe on the top?
Oh, my gosh, I wish that evening paper would come.
I thought you sent the little girl for one.
Oh, that kid is disresponsible. Look, do you think I got gypped on this ring, Molly?
Well, frankly, yes, dearie.
Oh, I guess you're right. But I can fix that. Just watch me unload it on somebody. Maybe I buy dumb, but I sell smart.
Oh, maybe that's the little girl with the paper. Come in.
Hello, folks. Remember me? I'm Beulah. Oh,
yeah. Oops's new cook. Hi, Beulah.
How do you like your new position, Beulah?
Ma'am, I've been bending over a stove for 15 years now. Yeah, the job is new, but the position ain't.
See, did the Toop's children bother you very much, Beulah?
Oh, no, ma'am. In fact, one of the biggest moments of my day is helping them little children get off to school.
Oh.
Yeah. Watching them walk down the street hand in hand.
Oh. That's kind of sweet.
Yeah, sir. Only thing bothers me is I know sooner or later they're coming back home again.
Well, so you like it at Toop's, is eh, Beulah?
Yes. Anyway, I never leave the place without I give plenty of notice.
Oh.
In my last job, everything worked out perfect. I worked there 2 weeks, took 2 weeks vacation, and give them 2 weeks notice.
That's about what happened to the last cook we had. She was a good cook, as cooks go. And as cooks go, she went.
Oh, look at you. He really amused me, ain't he, man?
Well, I might as well agree. It'd be two against one.
Well, I hope Mrs. Toop don't work you too hard, Beulah.
Oh, no. The work ain't hard. It's the walking back from the garage that wear me out.
Well, why do you have to go out the garage all the time?
That's involuntary, ma'am. Every time I goes out to the icebox on the back porch, I steps on one of Little Willie's roller skates, and the next thing I know is I'm sitting in the garage.
Good thing they leave the garage door open.
They didn't the first time.
Yeah?
But now it's open permanent.
Hmm.
Oh, excuse me, ma'am. I almost forget.
Mm-hmm.
Miss Toop sent me over here to return his egg she borrowed.
Heavenly days, I don't remember ever borrowing.
Why, that was Thanksgiving Day, Molly. Remember? They borrowed an egg to make eggnog?
That's exactly the time, sir.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't make no eggnog, so they returned the same egg. And it's as good as new. Thank you very much.
Well, it's very thoughtful of them to return the same egg. Shows a great respect for property rights.
Yeah.
They weren't going to return just any old egg, no, sir.
Well, be careful with it. A two-month-old egg is a lethal weapon.
It's lethal.
Oh.
What'll I do with it?
Left it near the front door. I'll return it to Mort Toops if I see him walking past after dark. Doggone it, I got to unload this ring. I wonder who I...
Come in. Oh, hello, Dr. Gamble.
Ah. Hello, Mrs. McGee. Hello, McGee.
Hi, Arrowsmith. What's the good word? Epidemic?
Oh.
You know, McGee, there are times when you remind me of Mark Twain.
As a humorist, Doctor?
No, just as someone who's been dead for some time. He has a certain zombie quality that... Well, 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 where did you get the racetrack diamond, McGee? In a box of Cracker Jack?
Genuine diamond, Doc. It's a beauty, ain't it?
Mm.
4 carats, at least. Just bought it this afternoon.
You just bought a 4-carat diamond? That's disgusting.
What?
What do you mean, that's disgusting?
Why, a diamond that size must have cost $2,000.
Well, so what?
And with the country needing every spare nickel to pay the cost of this war and pile up some savings to prevent inflation after the war, you've got a colossal nerve to stand there and tell me you've been buying 4-carat diamonds.
Yeah, but Dr. Gamble...
What's the matter with you, McGee? Haven't you got any sense of responsibility? Think you can hand a bunch of men some rifles and say, you go fight for me, chum. I'll stay here and buy diamonds.
Why, certainly not, but gee, who's...
You realize that American citizens have their choice right now of either storing up savings or storing up trouble? We can either buy war bonds and have a nice golden nest egg after the war, or we can throw our money away and kill the goose.
Yeah, but Dr. when McGee bought that diamond ring...
Don't you know that with Tokyo and Northern Europe in our bomb sites, we're really just getting into this war? Talk about a second front. You know where the second front is? In your wallet, son, and don't forget it. Disgusting. Short sport like you with a 4-carat diamond.
Envious, huh? You ought to have a ring like this, Doc. Make you look prosperous.
I don't want to look prosperous. I want to look as seedy as possible. If I look prosperous, nobody would pay their doctor bills. As it is, they feel sorry for me and throw me a couple of dollars now and then.
Maybe a little flashy for a doctor, McGee.
Oh, it's no such a thing. Here, try it on your pinky, Doc.
Well...
There. Why, it looks swell on him, don't it, Molly?
Sure, sure.
I bought it to wear myself, Doc, but... Gee, when I see it looks so good on you, I'd let it go for $200.
$200?
McGee, why are you charging the doctor so much?
What do you mean?
You only paid $20 for it.
Oh. So he only paid $20 for it. Isn't that interesting? Why, you chiseling little...
Now, wait a minute, Doc. Wait a minute. Now, let me explain. I merely want to get my dough back so I can buy a war bond, Doc. That's all. Cross my heart. Give me $20 and it's yours.
You wouldn't be coming to the conclusion that this is stolen property and getting cold feet, would you, my friend?
No, sir. I just want to get my dough back and go buy a bond.
Very patriotic. But just to prove that I can go along with a gag, here's $20.
Oh, thanks. 5, 10, 15, 20. Okay.
I'll see that he buys a bond first thing in the morning, Doctor.
Yeah. And furthermore, Doc Gamble, you got no business buying diamond rings when the country needs every cent for war bonds. You know where the Second Front really is? It's in your big fat wallet, son. That's disgusting. A sports shirt like you with a 4-carat diamond.
Oh, don't get me wrong, McGee. I'm not buying this ring for myself.
Well, who are you buying it for, Doctor?
I'm returning it to the owner. Didn't you see the want ads in the paper tonight? This is obviously the ring that was lost at 14th and Oak Street that they're offering a reward of $300 in war bonds for. I'll let you know.
Why, that dirty chiseling devil cut!
Ladies and gentlemen, your attention, please. A while ago, your local announcer gave you a phone number. That's because we have arranged for your radio station to stand by the telephone to take your orders for war bonds. Will you please call them? Tell them you'd like to buy a war bond from Fibber, McGee, and Molly.
You've been wonderful to us all these years, and we don't often ask any favors, but won't you please buy an extra bond tonight? We'd like to make this the biggest evening in war bond selling. And all over the United States, radio station staffs are waiting to take your calls, and they'll wait all night if necessary.
Call the number that was given you right now. If the line is busy, call again. Our men in uniform don't fire one shot and quit, and we know you won't.
If it's impractical for you to telephone your radio station, send them a telegram or a letter, but please buy another bond. We don't think it's necessary. You all read the papers and listen to the radio. And you know there are things this country must do in Europe and in the Pacific, things which can only be done with bombs and bullets and men and money.
So get in touch with the station you're listening to right now. They're waiting for you. In just a few seconds, your announcer will repeat the telephone number in case you missed it the first time. An extra bond bought tonight will mean a lot to you after the war. It'll mean a lot to your country, and it means a lot to Molly and me personally.
The finest thing that could happen to us would be to have every individual listening tonight buy one $25 bond.
So stay with it tonight. Until you buy a little piece of victory.
And a little peace of mind. Thank you, and God bless you.
Good night.
Good night, all.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Fibber, McGee, and Molly on Tuned to Yesterday from February 1st, 1944 on NBC. Part of NBC's Tuesday night lineup at 9:30. Over 30 million people tuned in for that broadcast. It's an hour of comedy on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now a program that hosted a comedy giant, though they were still in their summer season, technically. It's Wednesday with You from September 5th, 1945. Normally, Eddie Cantor would be the host, but his announcer during the regular season, Harry Von Zell, takes on that task in this episode next from NBC, where 21 million people were tuned in.
Each Wednesday with you.
Myers, makers of Sal Hepatica for the smile of health and Truche Be Beforehand Lotion, presents Wednesday with You. Starring Nora Martin, Brett Martell, Leonard Seuss and his orchestra, and yours truly, Harry Von Zell. Hey, Leonard. Look, we just got an urgent wire from Washington here, fella. It asks all of us here at Cantor's Cozy Cabana to contribute to the scrap paper drive. There's a terrific shortage of paper, you know. Yeah. The lumber mills haven't got men to chop down the trees,
Without trees, you can't get pulp, and without pulp, you can't, well, you couldn't get newspapers.
Gee, Harry, that's terrible.
You bet it is.
Yeah. Imagine running out of trees just when Dick Tracy's about to capture B.O. Plenty.
That's all you're worried about. Well, don't be so light with this. This paper shortage is a very serious thing. I'm doing my... Look at me. When I bought this suit, I didn't even let him put it in the box, you know. Just walked up to the clerk and said to him, how much is that suit? And he says, $19.75, and believe me, it's a steal.
What did you do?
I stole it.
So that's how you saved the paper box.
Sure.
Well, believe me, in that condition you're in, you needed a new suit.
Well, what do you mean? What's wrong with me?
Well, your clothes were shabby, and you needed a shave.
Yeah?
Well, what would Eddie Cantor say if he saw you in that condition?
Oh.
We start the new season September 26th. For 39 weeks, you've got to face a microphone.
Well, I can do that.
Well, for 39 weeks, you've got to face a studio audience.
Leonard, I can do that easily.
For 39 weeks, you've got to face Cantor.
I wonder how I can answer that and still keep my job now.
How are you coming along with your scrap paper collecting now?
Oh, great, Harry. And thanks for contributing those pin-up pictures of Rita Hayworth and Betty Grable.
All right.
You know, those glamorous movie stars give me an idea.
Give me ideas, too.
An idea.
Yeah, I mean we could put on a play. Each guest would have to donate a bundle of paper to get in.
Hey, that's great.
Yeah, and I would write the play.
Leonard, you would write the play?
Yeah.
Oh, Leonard.
Yeah.
That stinks.
What do you know about the theater, my boy?
Well, didn't you ever read my play, The Secret Marriage of Cleopatra and King Henry VIII?
No, give me a whiff of it.
Wait a minute. Cleopatra and...
Look, Cleopatra was born in 69 B.C., and Henry VIII was born in 1491. That makes her 1,600 years older than he was.
What's the difference as long as they love each other?
A female George Jessel we have here. Look, if you don't know anything about show business, now just forget all about it.
But I was practically born in the theater, Harry.
I can't help it.
Why, when I first started to act, my father used to have to carry me off the stage.
No.
Yeah.
Carry you off? Are you that young?
No. That bad.
I see.
But I've improved.
You have.
Yeah.
Leonard, I didn't know you were sick.
Gee, Nora, you're just in time. I want to show Harry I'm an actor.
All right.
Help me do this scene. It's entitled Mother.
Yes, you go right ahead, kid. The corn is green. Go right ahead.
Mother. Mother. It's a little Johnny. It's your baby. Open the door. Mother, why don't you open the door? Mother, open the door! Open the door!
Why won't his mother open the door?
His mother's heard his acting before.
Oh, Harry, if we just had a good director, we could put on a play. And we could get enough paper to... Harry.
Huh?
Harry!
Boy, what luck. Look who's coming this way.
Yeah, I know. Your father to carry you off the stage again.
No, it's Raymond Radcliffe. Hollywood's greatest genius.
No.
He writes.
Yes.
He produces.
Yes.
He acts.
Yes.
He's a human dynamo.
Sure.
Hello, Mr. Radcliffe.
Greetings, friends.
Welcome to Cantor's Cozy Cabana, Mr. Radcliffe.
Thank you.
I've heard a great deal about you, how you never stop thinking. Yes, I'll bet there's something sensational on your mind right now. Is it a drama, a comedy, or a pageant?
Food. I'm hungry.
Oh. Right this way to our dining room. It's world-renowned, you know. Notice the inscription on the door. We feed the famous. Eddie Cantor and Jack Benny have dined here.
What does the other sign say?
Watch your hat and coat.
Gee, Mr. Radcliffe, tell us something about your theatrical background. It must be wonderful.
Well, I was born backstage in a twunk, and it was terrible.
Terrible? Why? I think most children of the theater were born in trunks.
Well, sure, but I was 24 years old before my parents whipped her to wed.
That must have been stuffy in there.
Oh, it was terrible.
Mr. Radcliffe, you didn't really spend all those years in a trunk.
Oh, no? And how come I still got a sticker plastered on me weeding this end up?
Say, Leonard... You know, for once, I think you've come up with a great idea.
Yeah?
I think the play will be a great success if you can get Raymond Radcliffe to direct it, and if you can persuade the greatest romantic figure of the screen to play the leading role.
Who's that, Harry?
Me.
You, Harry?
Now, you? Surprised. Now, don't act so surprised. After all, didn't I play the leading role in Robin Hood? You see this scar on my neck?
Yeah.
I got that during the dueling scene while the picture was being made.
When did you get all those scars on your face?
After the picture was released.
Oh, look, Harry.
No, I will not be discouraged, my boy. I have a message to put on the screen. Or shall I put it on the stage?
How about the radio?
Bingo, the radio, of course. One of the greatest means ever devised for delivering a message. And because my message can help so many people, I'm glad radio can deliver it to so many people.
Well, I'm glad that you're glad, Harry.
Well, I'm glad that you're glad that I'm glad.
Yeah. Why not try it now, just for size?
Well, gladly. Ladies and gentlemen, when you wake up in the morning feeling sick and headachy due to the need of a laxative, take a glassful of sparkling sal hepatica. For then sal hepatica brings quick, gentle relief, usually within an hour. That means you'll never have to risk feeling miserable all day waiting until night to take a laxative. You take sal hepatica the minute you need it. And besides getting this quick, gentle relief, sparkling sal hepatica gives you the additional advantage of helping to sweeten an upset stomach by helping to reduce excess gastric acidity. So why don't you get a bottle of sal hepatica and see how helpful it can be to you? Remembering this caution, use only as directed. Then whenever you need a laxative, morning, noon, or night, see how much faster you feel better thanks to gentle, speedy sal hepatica.
Oh, Mr. Radcliffe, I'm so thrilled. Mr. Seuss tells me you're going to direct us in a play.
For what? You will be my weeding waiter, and I will teach you to weed lines by Katharine Hepburn.
You mean
Yep, just like Katharine. You remember that immortal scene in Morning Glory when Katharine Hepburn comes into the room and says, Wowie, the cowards are in gloom.
Mr. Radcliffe.
Yes, lad?
Lad. Well, naturally, you'll need an experienced leading man.
Oh, naturally.
Uh-huh. Well, then, may I tell you that I've been acting for 10 years?
Really?
Oh, yes. I started at the bottom, you know, with Gary Cooper, Walter Pidgeon, Clark Gable.
Well, you've certainly gone a long way since then, haven't they?
I beg your pardon, sir, but all I need to be a great lover is Hedy Lamarr as my leading lady. And I'd show you some acting, Mr.
Oh, really, Mr. Funzel. Hedy Lamarr would make a fool out of you in exactly 3 minutes.
But oh, those 3 minutes.
Oh, me. I, too, have dreams like that.
You do?
Yep. But with me, it's Dorothy Woodmore. In my dreams, she pulls me close to her and she says, Frankie, you're wonderful.
Wait, she says to you, Frankie, you're wonderful?
Well, sure, in my dreams I don't look like this.
I've got it. I wrote a play.
Oh, yes. Leonard Zeus, the poor man's Orson Welles.
Mr. Von Zell, you should encourage talent.
Yeah.
Now, tell me, lad, have you written previously?
Oh, sure. I wrote the senior play in college. When the curtain came down, they shouted, Arthur, Arthur. I walked out on the stage with my eyes closed. And I could just feel the audience putting their arms around me. And when I opened my eyes...
I know it was your father carrying you off the stage again.
Well, there's the curtain. Quick, Noah. Good luck.
Happened. Let's what now? Just a minute. Let's get together, all
well,
right?
I said it. What?
Who was supposed to say, come on, hello, Nora, good luck?
I said it.
Well, go ahead and say it then.
All right, again. There's the curtain. Quick, Nora, good luck. Trumpet fanfare.
Give them all their money.
Begin.
Hark, here comes Julius Caesar.
Greetings, oh, queen.
Oh, at last, my. Oh, at last, my beloved hero. Tell me, J.C., where have you been since VJ?
Well, it was a long journey back from the bottle.
Well, I have been with...
The bottle?
What's the matter?
The word is battle. Now do it right.
Maybe I need glasses, huh?
Maybe you need glasses. Sound like you've had too many glasses already.
All right.
Now go back to the play.
All right. The war must be over. I bet that's...
You don't mind if I read my own lines, do you? Kind of a thing.
Right,
on the door again, please. Is that the best door you've got open? All right, bang it off.
The war must be over. I bet that's the Fuller Brush Man.
It's not Brutus, I hope.
Why dost thou hope 'tis not Brutus?
He wants to kill me. Why doesn't he like me?
B.O.
Really? Oh, Cleo, I am afraid. Yes. I feel faint.
Yes.
Give me a twink.
Yes.
Open the window and give me a little pinch.
I will...
No, what an actor. Look, the word is punch.
Huh?
Not P.I., it's P.U.
I know, that's why I want to open the window.
On with the play.
Go ahead, Cleo.
I'm Cleo now.
Dear Mato, Caesar, as long as there's life, there's hope.
Hope, hope, hope. When does Canada go back on the air?
September 26th, I hope.
Who was that?
That was Canada.
Didn't thou bring me any loot, lout?
Bowie. Bowie, this lout is loaded with loot.
What?
When I was on the Volga, I stole some vodka. When I was on the Rhine, I swiped some wine.
Jerk, you were on the Nile. Why didn't you get me some nylons?
Oh, I'm not going to do this.
There's the door again.
Yes. Nice of Brutus to wait till we got those jokes in.
Or who put this in here now?
I must flee. I must flee. I will jump through that glass window.
Jump? Oh, silly, don't you know glass hasn't been invented yet?
Then I go. Farewell.
The I lose more darn kings that way. Oh, knocking on the door. Come in.
It's Mark Anthony approaching on his horse.
Pardon.
Now there, tall, dark, and handsome.
Gee, thanks.
I'm talking to the horse now.
You'll be sorry when you see the screen test I made in Hollywood.
You were in Hollywood, Mark Anthony?
Sure.
Now I'm an actor now. You want to hear me in act?
In act, in act. Go ahead.
Listen to this. I wrote it myself. Oh, mother.
Oh,
mother. Mother. It's your life. It's your baby. Open the door, mother. Why don't you open the door?
Hey, baby, this is your mother now.
Come in.
I have found you, my son.
But,
I heard you acting. I recognized your voice. Don't you know me, Leonard? I am your father.
Raymond Radcliffe, my father?
Yes. Don't you remember the last time you acted when I carried you off the stage?
That's right.
Well, here we go again.
Mama and my papa say I no can do, no can do, no can do. I want for me to go with you, but no can do. You like me, I like you. I like for you to Romeo, your Julie, you. No can do, no can do. My mama and my papa say I no can do. The moon, she say to me, come on, come out tonight. I want for you to hold my hand and hold me tight. And love, it can be wrong, and so it must be right. But oh, no can do, no can do. I like for you with what you call a tip-a-woo. No can do, no can do. My mama and my papa say I no can do. She was the Latin daughter. He was the caballero. He called around the quarter, but from her balcony he would hear her say, ah, la 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 la. No can do, no can do. My mama and my papa say I know.
Nora Martin, very nice.
Yes, indeed. It certainly was, Nora.
Very nice little performance all around. Not bad at all.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Mr. Radcliffe.
It's all right, yeah. Just a few rough edges, but we could smooth those over.
Yes.
Why, with my direction and my production, even Eddie Cantor could be a success.
Don't you think that's promising a little too much?
Not at all, not at all. I would also include Fred Martell and Leonard Seuss in my prognostications. With just a little more coaching...
Well, how about Harry Von Zell? Could you do anything with him?
Oh, no. Directing Harry Von Zell would be an incredible waste of my energy. He doesn't do enough. After all, he's got the easiest job on the show.
Now, listen here, Mr.
No, what's right is right, Nora. Mr. Radcliffe is right. Just standing up here in front of a microphone and talking to women is an easy job and a very pleasant one. Especially when I'm talking about Touché, the beforehand lotion. For Touché is a really new idea in hand lotions, you know. Something worth getting excited about, because Touché is designed to help guard your hands, to help keep them soft and smooth. You use Touché before you do dishes or tub undies, because Touché will help guard your hands even in hot, soapy water. Of course, you can use Touché as you use any other hand lotion, but Touché gives you the added plus of beforehand protection when you need it. You'll find creamy, fragrant Touché really different, really helpful for rough legs, knees, and elbows, as well as hands. So why don't you begin today to use Touché?
A thousand times a day, my thoughts go out to you. They seem to show the way to every joy we knew. How you smile, how you kiss, how you sigh. My heart dances with you by my side a thousand times a day. In every dream I see the loveliness of you, the loneliness of me. And if my prayers can bring you home, to stay. With every breath I take, I'll pray a thousand
Leonard
Seuss,
the young man with the horn.
When I write to you and say everything is okay, if my letters seem gay, can't you read between the lines? I go dancing when I'm blue, as you wrote me to do. But it's not like with you. And you read between the lines. It might worry you if I told you I cried every night. You'll tell me it won't. But if I take a chance every night, I'll be seeing you again. Only heaven knows when, but my dear, until then, can you read between the lines? Everything is okay. Can't you read between the lines? Let it seem gay.
everything is okay.
We're a little late, but listen, we weren't kidding at all about that scrap paper drive. Do your share. For information, call up your local salvage committee. Be seeing you next Wednesday for more music and fun, and in the meantime, don't forget the two products that make our Wednesdays with you possible. Sal Hepatica for the smile of health, and Truche, the beforehand lotion. Sal Hepatica, Truche. This is Harry Von Zell reminding you, we'd love to spend each Wednesday with you. Say, wait just a second, will you? Just long enough for me to tell any one of you with an aching back to get yourself a jar of Minute Rub. Because Minute Rub is a modern, quick-acting rub that helps bring speedy relief to aches and to tired, aching muscles. All you do is rub Minute Rub on briskly. In a minute, its counter-irritant and pain-relieving actions bring help bring soothing, welcome relief. And listen, here at last is a quick-acting rub that's also greaseless and stainless. This appears like vanishing cream, so Minute Rub will not harm clothes or limbs.
Wednesday with you on Tuned to Yesterday from September 5th, 1945. Both comedy broadcasts in this past hour drew 51 million listeners altogether in the 1944 and 1945 radio seasons on NBC. And I hope you enjoyed comedy on this episode of Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.